It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
It isn't often that I have an entertainer on the show for something he wrote, but this is one of those times. Clint Carvalho has written on Facebook about two important topics, one being true to yourself and the other, the changing scene in Las Vegas. We'll talk about both of those topics, as well as a bird's eye view of his performing career. And multifaceted entertainer Clint Carvalho is an America's Got Talent finalist. He's recipient of the Las Vegas Entertainer of the Year Award, and he's been part of the Las Vegas entertainment scene for decades. For everything about Clint, go to topbird.com, topbird.com, and you can follow him on Facebook, TikTok, and LinkedIn. And Clint, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
For those viewers and listeners who may not be aware of Clint Carvalho, and they should if they've been in Las Vegas, but give us a little bit of your background.
I moved here in 1986. I train exotic parrots, and I do a show with them, so that's what kind of made me unique when I came to town. Not too many people had performing animals, and the ones they did end up, you know, down the road leaving. And fortunately for me, I've been here ever since, and the birds are always doing great, and they're all still alive, the same birds, which another thing, people get a little lost on that, because, you know, when you're here almost 40 years, I think, like a dog or a cat, that bird must be gone. Still alive, still doing the exact same stuff.
You may be gone, but they're not gone. Oh, yeah. Sorry. So fair disclosure, Clint and I worked together at the Tropicana back in the old days before, of course, the Trop is no longer with us. But so I know Clint from there. But I was, as I mentioned in the opening, I was very impressed with the two topics you were talking about. And let's start with the first one, which was really finding yourself and the journey that you took to do that. So give us a little background on why you felt you had lost your way and then what transpired and why you decided to write about it.
Well, after COVID, you know, 50% of the shows had closed, and the ones that did open up again were usually the large shows with large budgets. All the small shows, the mom and pop shows, will say gone. And so then you find yourself, you're a performer, so what are you looking for? You're looking for an audience, right? Because you're nothing without your audience. So I'm going into some of these smaller shows that just open up and somebody put up $25,000, $50,000, but they don't have money for costuming. They don't have money for real acts. And I hate to say it that way, but you know, when I came into town, we were called specialty acts. And the ones now are barely special. And that sounds mean, but back in the day, you know, we had really top-notch performers, band members, orchestra. I mean, everybody was great, right? So when you go into an audience where people went there for the deal, not the magic, you just don't fit in because they're not looking for magic. They are just looking for, you know, an hour to buy time or whatever. And unfortunately, a lot of the acts around me are just not the same as me. So I stand out in a bad way. You would think I would stand out like a good way, right? But I don't. I just don't fit in. I don't feel my audience. And that's where I was getting lost.
And when you started to do that, and that's part of what you wrote about in your second piece, which was about the changing aspect of Las Vegas. But let's stick with this first part first. And that is, you went to these smaller shows, your point is well taken. The magic was not what they were looking for. It was the deal. It was the value. And when you noticed that, did you ever have any self-doubt that you would continue as a performer?
That's an excellent question because that's all I had. I'm the most confident person you'll ever meet, but I'm starting to go, wow, am I, you know, like an athlete? Am I just wearing out my time? I'm done. I should be benched. But that's why I had to go to Stockton. I was like going, I have to find my roots and figure out who I was. I'm in my one saying, everyone knows if they know me. I always like to say, you got to have Eye of the Tiger, right? We all know if you're older and you know Rocky, you go, I'm looking for Eye of the Tiger. So that's what I went back to Stockton for, to find my Eye of the Tiger. And when I went there, I found out that I wasn't the problem. It was this town, it was the shows I was in, and that I need to find the audiences that value my worth at what I do with my parrots.
Did you grow up in Stockton? Because that's where
I grew up in Stockton. The funny thing about that is my friends that knew me was not in the article, but I, my first job, my only job forever, and this is what taught me to teach birds, is I was a black belt in karate, and I used to teach karate for a living from the time I was 15 and a half till I was in my 20s. And that's what helped me with training the parrots. So when I went back to Stockton, they all know me as this guy that used to do all these competition and fighting.
Right.
They didn't know me as this guy who moved to Vegas, wore makeup at times at night. I was a whole different person. So it's two different people completely. So when I went to see them, I got to feel who I was originally, not who I became because I had to fit in here.
That makes sense. But when did you start to become, and we'll get back to Stockton in just a second, but something that you said about your former life in martial arts, and when did you become involved with birds and training birds and making birds your act? Somewhere along the line, you shifted from martial arts to birds, or maybe you could still do both. Maybe you could do a karate exhibition with some of the parrots. What do you think?
No, I tried that in the beginning of time. So I started birds when I was about 11 years old and had them as pets. And what happened was where the karate and the entertainment came together was I was able to start taking the birds to schools, right? For a teacher would say, "Hey, Clint, can you bring that bird over to the school? The kids would like to meet him." So I'd do that every year for a while. And then all of a sudden one year, the kids go, "Hey, I went to Busch Gardens. I saw a bird riding a bike. How come your bird can't ride a bike?" And so the eye of the tiger. I go, okay, I'm going to get my birds to do things. So it got to the point where I could do things with the birds. And then teaching karate didn't pay any money. I mean, it was just, I had a girlfriend, I had car payments, I had insurance, I had all these things, and it wasn't paying me at all. And then I landed a job at a theme park, and I made so much money just during the summer that I almost didn't know what to do with the money. I was actually starting to put it in a shoebox. I was going, my God, I'm not used to this kind of money. So that, and back to your question was, I tried to do martial arts though, because that's all I knew, right? And I was doing the entertainment as my job now. And then all of a sudden when you're practicing, you get hit. No matter who you are, you're going to get hit. You're going to get hurt. I went to work one time. I had a big fat lip. And the entertainment director comes up to me and goes, "We pay you to look good. We don't pay you to look like a punching bag on stage." Because I remember my lip was so fat. It was ridiculous. Anyway, so then I had to make a decision. I'm going to have to give up martial arts because this is my career now. This is what I'm telling myself I'm going to do. And that's where I'm at.
Did the entertainment director know it was because of martial arts, or did he suspect there was domestic abuse?
No, back then they didn't talk about domestic abuse at all. No, he knew that I was a martial artist, and I told him, I said, "You know, I practice." I go, "You're always going to get hit." But he was adamant about, you know, he was a show guy. He was an entertainer. I mean, in reality, back then, you know, entertainment directors knew entertainment. So he goes, "We pay you to look good," and so that I understood that. I got it.
So you stopped the martial arts at that point.
Stopped the martial arts.
Going to the parrots again, when you started to work with the parrots and training them, and then when the kids challenged you about the parrots not being able to do certain things such as ride a bike, are there specific techniques that you use to train the parrots? Or they're very bright birds, so they learn, but is there and you don't have to be very specific because if it's trademarked, I don't want you to share anything, but
No.
How is it that you work with the birds and are able to make them do certain things?
Well, first of all, I don't use the word make. So I never make them do anything. I always ask them to do things. And that was kind of like my pet peeve after shows.
That's a very good point. I apologize. You're right. You're not making them. You're asking them. You're working
with
them.
Because that's the problem. People want to enslave spouses, friends, whatever it is. So with the parrots, it's always you ask them to do something they love to do. So one thing I do that no one else does is their tricks are called behaviors. So I might train a parrot to do 50 behaviors. And if I find out he likes to do only one, that's the only one that he has to do. That's what made me successful on a Las Vegas stage. Because when I was a star of Splash, I would follow a Melissa Etheridge number with 24 topless girls in leather G-strings in the second show, grinding to this music, and the lights are fading down, the music's fading down, the girls are groping each other, right? And then all of a sudden, it goes to blackness, and all of a sudden I go, "Ladies and gentlemen, the stars flash, Clint Carvalho." I come out with a parrot, and people would say, get the F off the stage. They didn't want me. So the whole idea was when I went out there, my birds had to be perfect. They had to want to do everything. It was like if you throw a ball for your dog, you know he's going to go get it 10 out of 10 times. So the birds, when they go out there, can't wait. They have the eye of the tiger. They want to do this. And so the audience was very impressed with that. And plus, I also worked really hard at being an entertainer. So I didn't look like Mutual of Omaha when you're out there. It wasn't like the Wild Kingdom. It was a top-notch music, top-notch entertainer, and top-notch animals doing things that were like, wow.
So it's similar to with the comedian that walks out before Sinatra comes out, and they don't want to listen to the comedian. They want Sinatra. So it's that same kind of situation.
Exactly.
Were you surprised at your success in Las Vegas when you first moved here?
Yes. I mean, in reality, and part of it was, and that's why both articles go hand in hand, is, you know, when I moved to Vegas with the Trop Show and we had this discussion, that was a free show, right? Three times a day. But after every single show, and until this day, no matter what, when they say my name on stage and that curtain goes down, I run out with one of my parrots and I always talk to the audience. And the audience gives you firsthand exactly what they like, what they don't like, and you fix those things right then and there. At the Tropicana, I talked to people after every show. It became where people would come and see my show and go, man, I'm seeing a great entertainer. And I'd go to the buffet. So if people came in the town, these are family people, right? They don't have a lot of money to spend when somebody comes in town to take them to Siegfried and Roy at the time. So people would say that to me, which was a compliment, but I knew they were way off. They'd say, you're like seeing Siegfried and Roy, because they never saw Siegfried and Roy. All they're saying is they see as an entertainer with animals, right? But they would go and kill a couple hours, eat at the buffet, walk around the Tropicana, see my show, talk to me, take pictures of me, put a bird on them. And so the average Joe Blow, and I did 300 people per show, so that was 900 people per day, 6 days a week. So I touched a lot of people. And down the road, everyone got to know who I was and what I was about. And so people wanted me. And so the only thing I had to learn how to do is become an indoor show and not an outdoor family friendly. I had to go to more the adult crowd if I was going to make any money.
Right. You were talking about going to Stockton. We'll veer back and forth between what we're talking about now and your two articles, which we'll link to it. If you're watching us on YouTube, we'll link to those.
Yeah. I was going to send you the articles. Yeah. Both the articles as we speak are going to go hand in hand in my brain. Cause when I was going to do a follow-up to the first one, but then the whole thing about Vegas came up and I was going, I got to talk about this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, when you went back to Stockton to find yourself, did you find that you really didn't need to find yourself? And this is what I mean by that, that you always have this inherent talent and enthusiasm and performance. You always have the birds. Things may change around you, but it's still you. But it seems like you needed that reassurance going back to Stockton and having your friends and family from when you were first raised there give you that validation. Is that
That's absolutely the truth. Once again, when I was trying to do these shows here, I felt like I was losing my self-worth. And that's like a relationship where you just feel like the other person doesn't care about you. And Vegas didn't care about me anymore. I mean, because in reality, we all that live here and been here feel like we have a relationship with this town, right? And when that town is showing you that you're not needed, or at least you think you're not needed, you try to find that validation, like you said. So when I went there, I was able to talk with my friends. And they didn't understand what I was talking about because they don't understand Vegas at all, nor do they want to, sure. Right? So the beautiful thing was these conversations I was having with them I never had here. So most of the time when I was doing the talking, I was just hearing myself talk. And that's what I really needed, was to hear myself go this, this, and that. And then I started believing in myself again, going, it's not me. I am not the problem here. Be like a bad relationship, right? Go, I'm not the problem. The relationship's the problem.
Well, also, too, you could theoretically have talked to people on the phone or via Zoom, your friends and family in Stockton. But I think the personal connection in person makes more sense for you.
Well, for me, also, I like to make a lot of jokes and stuff. So I could be a real man's man and I could be a woman's woman, which sounds funny. But I spent a lot of time with them laughing and having a great time and talk. And the beauty of it was talking about who I was. And then validating, using your word over and over again, who I was at one time and what they loved about me and the things we did together, these experiences. And I start going, and I'm building that foundation all back up again to the point where I felt like, okay, I'm like ready to go back to Vegas, right? But Vegas is still Vegas. And that's what I realized. And that's where that other article came in. I
was going, yes, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I was also thinking about when I read both of the articles that there are a lot of performers who live in Vegas who don't necessarily perform in Vegas anymore, but they do perform. They use Las Vegas as a base and they perform elsewhere. They either on cruise ships or in venues in other cities, and they do very well. And I don't know if you've made that decision as to keeping Las Vegas as a base and then performing elsewhere. It ties in with your second article, but I'll let you explain it because you're the one that wrote it.
Well, I have given that thought, and I have tried that, but it doesn't work because I have to go places with my animals. So anytime you have to put an animal on an airplane or anything like that, I mean, you in reality, there's some kind of risk, right? Even though the airlines can be great, you're looking for possible trouble. So I would be more comfortable living in an area where, unlike this place now, where I used to be, you know, a big fish in a little pond. Now I'm not even a guppy. People don't even know who I am. I could go somewhere else and live there and become a big fish because of all the things I've done. And my birds could be right there. So yeah, traveling with them is not ideal. I mean, cause yeah, I get offers all the time. And the ones I do love is like doing a lot of TV shows. So all I have to do is drive to LA and back. That's that. The birds are with me the entire time. They're not being handled by somebody else. So it's the traveling with the animals. And then you become so attached to these guys, especially, like I said, the birds are still alive. So we're talking that these birds are all in their 40s, right? That is a real, real relationship I have with them. And I expect them to be at my funeral, right? So I do not want anything to happen to them, or do I want to be responsible because I was chasing money.
So, how many birds do you have? Are they all parrots, or is it?
They're all parrots, and all the ones I take in, which this is where other people don't understand or know this about me. They can see me as the entertainer, or they'll see my photo op. Let's try send you some links, because the photo ops are what I do is I take in severely abused parrots, and I rehabilitate them with my talents. And like humans, only about 1-3% ever can become a showbird. Most of them just want to interact with human beings. Even professional athletes, they become professional athletes, and after a year or two, they fall out. So with these birds that do not want to be showbirds, I started creating attractions. And that's where that second article really came in, is that from the time I really, in 2020 at Mandalay Bay, we had what's called the Bird Girls of Mandalay Bay. We had birds flying in the lobby. So I could take these birds, fix them, and then they could interact with guests, which was the most important thing, because they hated human beings. They were afraid of human beings, right? So once they were able to interact with males, females, people in wheelchairs, they became so well-rounded, and they were actually better than they were originally, even though they were traumatized at one time. So attractions are my most important thing for all my parrots. And talking about how many I have, I'd even have to count again, because a lot of them I had to put into New York during COVID and gave them to a friend that was going through trying times with his, he has like a zoo there and he needed a bunch of parrots, and all mine are all adopted to me. And so people, when they give me these birds, they're expecting me to keep these birds forever. So I probably altogether, I have a couple hundred birds that are really mine still, but I keep about 80 with me.
That's a lot of birds. So I could see, even forget traveling, just taking care of it.
Right.
Yeah, it's quite the thing. So when you started to write the article about, when you were thinking about it and you started to write it about Las Vegas changing and it's not the same, and I agree with you, it's not. What was your conclusion after writing about the changes in Las Vegas, the changes in entertainment because of the changes in Las Vegas? It's a different feel than it used to be when you first started in Las Vegas, which was the 80s. And it's the entertainment is different. The dining is different. Some would say the dining is much, much better because you have so many new restaurants.
Right.
And so there's pluses as well, obviously.
Yeah.
And there's some great entertainment in Las Vegas. But specifically to you and your particular act, where you're between the rock and the hard place, or between the hard rock and the other kind of place. But the point is, you have a unique act, and yet you can't work in certain environments because they want the superstar, they want the production that's going to give them a high ticket price.
Right.
So what, how do you handle that? Or have you come up with an answer to that question yet?
I don't really have a really good answer, to be honest with you. It's been, I feel like, you know, it's like pain. It goes in a circle, keeps going until you do something to stop that pain. And that's how I felt. I felt like I was in this circle going, I don't know what I'm going to do about work. And the problem I have is that when I take these birds in, I promise the people that I'm going to take care of the birds. I'm going to do this with the birds. And once I fix them, in reality, they have to go out and interact with people on a daily basis to keep them well-rounded. It'd be like having a child and you only homeschool them and they never go out in the world, right? How would that child be when you first take them out? You know, it's got to be baby steps. So that after fixing these birds and them interacting with people for all these years, now they're just basically kind of just, you know, sitting in cages. So I have to spend my day taking them out, interact with them, flying them, you name it. It's a circle of trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And that's why I wrote those articles. I'm, you know, the second one, I was really trying to hear what I had to say. And then I was looking today, I think I have about 300,000 likes now. And everybody is like, I feel your pain, basically. And they all feel the same way. And I mean, that was the whole reason for the article. I talk to people all the time, just like yourself. And we all know that it's change. And I'm not, and a lot of people were trying to think, I was trying to say that the hotels don't make money or they're going to kill themselves. They're going to die. They're not going to die. They're not going to die. They're going to figure it out, but they've lost their magic. So I'm not ever saying that this place is going to go extinct. It's going to go extinct from its magic of the days gone by, right? But yeah, no, they're going to make money still. And I don't want people thinking, I think, you know, this place sucks. Vegas, like I said earlier, is a relationship. I'm trying to make this relationship work.
No, totally understandable. Have you thought about being creative in the choice of possible venues? And what I mean by that is that there are theaters in town that are available to use that might work out in terms of, and I hate to use this term because most people don't understand it, the four wall or the two wall.
Right.
But in the world of entertainment in Las Vegas, it's rare these days where an entertainer will get paid a salary, and instead they're expecting the entertainer with obviously major exceptions in terms of headliners. But for the average entertainer, they're looking more and more, the showrooms are looking more and more to rent the space and work out a deal where you pay for everything, including the advertising, and they just benefit from the people coming in to see you.
Right.
So, that's a long explanation to a question which should have been shorter, which is, have you looked at some of these alternate venues or alternative venues, especially there's some downtown now and there's elsewhere?
I have. But then once again, the downtown people are the people looking for deals. They're not looking for magic. So that makes it, I mean, I did do downtown. Between doing parrot photos down there, doing a couple of shows down there, that's when I found out they weren't my people. And I don't know if it sounds insensitive or whatever. They came in for, once again, the deals. They did not come in for the magic. And once again, back in the day, when you went to go see a show at night, you got dressed up and you expected magic. You expected that entertainer to blow your socks off, right? These guys were not doing that. They're going in for a $25 show to buy some time to say they saw a show. And I talked to them after the shows and it's like, I'm not having the same conversations I used to have.
It sounds like there's two extremes in today's Las Vegas. One is what you just said. They're looking for a deal and they don't really care about the magic. And on the other hand, they'll pay a high premium ticket price for a superstar performer that's appearing either at Caesar's Palace or at Wynn, et cetera. So you're in the middle there, as many performers are. And who knows, maybe there's a way of putting heads together and coming up with a way of because there's got to be a market niche that has that as its stamp. In other words, magic. I say magic, the broader sense of magic, and that's what you were referring to.
Right, okay, absolutely.
Not a magician.
Not an illusion.
Right, the magic of entertainment, which, yes.
Right.
I gotcha. You mentioned also that you had such a big response to it, and you have quite a presence on social media, especially on TikTok. We were talking before about the response on TikTok as well. Do you think that there's a way to harness, and maybe that's one alternative, is to harness technology and perform online with the birds and set up performance, because I remember very distinctly during COVID, there were performers that went to YouTube and other online services and were able to set up a performance or even private parties of performance through an online approach and where you would charge a certain amount of money.
Right. The difference is I've tried that. I'm the kind of person when you see me, and like I sent you my videos and stuff, right? I have never got a job in my entire life, and I've worked here for almost four decades. I've never got a job from a video. I only get my jobs from people seeing me live in person and seeing my connection with the parrots, my personality, me ad-libbing on stage when somebody yells. Because one of my things is I get the audience to scream and yell, and then they feel like they could say whatever they want to me, and they'll say things. They're adults drinking, so they're saying stuff, and they're shocked that I come back with these snappy little, you know, remarks. So yeah, it doesn't work for me. I'm great in person and suck otherwise.
I'm just being honest.
I mean, I know my kryptonite, and my kryptonite is trying to do things, you know, even this video, if we were talking in person and you saw me the whole time I'm talking, this is what's been going on, but no one's seeing that.
Right. No, understood. Yeah. Well, sometimes technology is very limiting, but yeah, it certainly is easier in a lot of ways, especially when you're limited on time or travel, et cetera, for that. So before I let you go, so let's talk about how do you see your future in entertainment? You had a chance to go back to Stockton, reconnect, find yourself again. So you've identified what and who you are. When I say what, meaning career-wise, but what and who you are, but also you still haven't cracked the code in terms of how you go forward, as other entertainers are trying to crack that code. So thinking about that, are you optimistic? Cautiously optimistic, cautiously pessimistic, or neutral at this point about how this will evolve?
I'm very neutral, because you want to stay here in Vegas. I mean, because I do get jobs still. I mean, but it's from entertainment companies calling me, knowing who I am. Right, so I get jobs, but they're on call. You know, they call me last minute or call me a month in advance. So let's do this. The problem I'm seeing is that no matter what, I'm gonna be in a dilemma because of Vegas itself. And I do want to say this. Here's how people should compare Vegas. Vegas and Disneyland. I used to always say this is Disneyland for adults, right? And that's the way it should be. But Disneyland, even though they charge outrageous prices to get in, churros cost more than a normal lunch cost, they've never lost their magic. You go to Disneyland, they must have a handbook or something. They tell everyone how to act. I mean, if the guy's sweeping, he's wearing a costume, he's not looking like our people walking through the casino, right? And if the child's looking at him for a long time, he smiles and he waves. Everyone at Disneyland is taught to act and be very friendly. Even and most people don't know this, but when a character's walking around and a child comes up and hugs them, a Disneyland code is you hang on to that child hugging him as long as he's hugging you. You don't let go until he lets go of you. That's what makes it so, you know, beautiful. You just see that, you see this embracing. It's not like, here you go, goodbye. So they're one of the biggest corporations in the world, but they didn't lose their magic, right? They've jacked their prices, but their magic's still there. We have jacked up our prices and lost our magic, but at the same price tag. You know, so that makes it hard for me, because they're narrowing this down where it almost feels like an exclusive golf course where you can only golf there unless you spend X amount of dollars to be a member. I wouldn't doubt down the road if they could do a subscription to Vegas, they would. I mean, no, that's kind of funny, but that's the kind of direction this place feels like it's going to. So like you said earlier about it's two different worlds. Yeah, you got the people looking for deals downtown now, and then you got only people that have money that, you know, have exclusive rights to go to these shows and all these things that they can afford that other people can't afford. And like you said about me being in a hard place in a rock, in the middle, I'm in the middle, and a lot of people that come to Vegas become in the middle too. They don't want the downtown experience, and they don't have enough money for the expensive stuff. So where do we go?
And that's a conundrum. And hopefully people watching and listening may come up with their own solutions, and they can reach you, and I'll tell them how to in just a moment. But thanks for coming on. My guest has been multifaceted entertainer Clint Carvalho. He's America's Got Talent finalist and recipient of the Las Vegas Entertainer of the Year Award. And for everything about Clint, and you can communicate with him there, he's got all his information there, topbird.com. That's topbird.com. And you can follow him on Facebook, TikTok, and LinkedIn. And Clint, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, I had a great time. Thank you for letting me spill my guts.
You got it. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Hey, Las Vegas.